Jackson, standard procedure. I forgot to mention that grandma's pension will ease the rent book tension. A little birdie told me you've been siphoning the board box. I heard the knitting circle discussing job loss. What's all the commotion? What do they expect? No sign of a promotion. I lost my self-respect, you see.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ellen Schultz, an investigative reporter who has covered the retirement crisis for more than a decade. Formerly with the Wall Street Journal, her reporting has led to congressional hearings, proposed legislation, and investigations by the Treasury and the GAO. She has won dozens of journalism awards for economics, financial, and investigative reporting, including 3 Polk Awards, 2 Loeb Awards, and a National Press Club Award. In 2003, she was part of a team at the Wall Street Journal that was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for articles on corporate scandals. Her new book is Retirement Heist: How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ellen Schultz.
Hi, Ian.
And your book, Retirement Heist: How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers. I saw you recently on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show, Ellen, and he had a very similar reaction that I did, which was, you know, you think after all of these corporate scandals from the crash of 2008, not that anybody's actually gone to jail, but that's another matter, that there'd be no outrage left. But somehow or other, you've managed to get me angry again. Yes, well, thanks a lot.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Yes, John Stewart said he had to have a glass of wine after he read the book. It made him very angry. You know, there's a parallel here with Occupy Wall Street. Or what they're overlooking is that this is exactly the sort of thing they're getting upset about. You know, they're focusing on the bailout of the banks and the subprime crisis that they caused, but the retirement crisis is very similar. It involves a lot of the same players, that is, large companies, banks, financial service industry. And in this case, it wasn't them decimating the mortgages of Americans. It was them decimating retirement plans so that many pensions are now frozen, people's 401ks are withering, and people are assuming that the companies had nothing to do with it because the companies blame workers. They say, well, they got older and the stock market went down, so we just have no choice but to do this. And in my research, as I had mentioned, that they actually played a big role in causing the crisis by taking billions of dollars out of the pension plans, cutting benefits to sort of make up for that, and using these strategies to boost profits, which, not surprisingly, boosted executive pay and executive pensions. So now companies have large and growing liabilities for the executives, even as what they owe regular people is shrinking.
So this is this has been a part of the great wealth transfer. Then, in effect, you can argue that the 2008 crash, subsequent to that, with the TARP fund and all the other bailouts, represent the greatest transfer of private debt into public debt. But what you're uncovering, Ellen Schultz, is that in your book, Retirement Heist, How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers, is that essentially the executives are plundering the workers' pensions so that they can, on top of the massive salaries that they can get, they can retire with hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes, it's through indirect means. It's not like they just reach in and pull it out. And that's why it's been so hard for people to recognize. You know, you talked about the transfer of debt from the banks to the government and the public. Well, this was similar. It was erasing their debt. They owed $1 trillion to people for pensions and retiree health care, and they used a lot of strategies to get out of owing this. And as you know, pension, just in the simplest form, it's essentially if you work for me today and earn $10, I'll give you $9 now and $1 years from now with essentially interest. So you'll have a part of your pay later. And it's that later part that companies are now saying they can't pay. And what actually fueled this was a change in accounting rules back in the early 90s, which enabled companies to report any kind of debt that they erased as profit. So companies knew that if they just, you know, cut a little here, a little there, whether it's dental plans or retiree health care, spouse coverage, cost of living increase for a pension, anything they did like that was erasing a debt. So they reported that as income. And this coincided with the change in the way executives were being compensated. It used to be, sure, they got big salaries, but companies began to award them pay that was based on performance, i.e. stock performance. So anything that boosted income boosted their pay, which was based on stock options and stock awards. And naturally, as their pay got larger, the pensions that they have, which are separate executive pensions, also ballooned. So it was just sort of like a cycle where cutting regular benefits for regular folks sort of fueled the growth of executive pensions and pay.
We're talking about a kind of cultural thing. At least that's what I get from my sort of outrage translates into trying to understand how a small group of Americans see themselves as being incredibly valuable at the expense of the larger 99%. And I'm trying to figure out what justifies this. And clearly we're in a culture now where the CEO compensations have gone up, I think, in the 50s. I think they were 40 times what the lowest paid worker is, and now it's, I think, over 300 times or 400 times. You have these CEOs that go from, you know, a pineapple canning factory to an aerospace company, and without missing a beat, apparently they've got some incredible skill that that is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. What you've been on Wall Street for some time, Alan Schultz, with the Wall Street Journal, and you were part of the team that won the Pulitzer Prize for uncovering corporate scandals in 2003. What led you to this? I mean, what? Because I go back to my remark and the one that also that Jon Stewart made on the Daily Show is that, you know, we thought we'd seen it all until you come along and with retirement hushed, and it sort of crystallizes in many ways the worst of corporate greed.
Well, what started it was just a very simple question, which is I noticed companies were changing their pension plans and announcing it with great, you know, fanfare. And, you know, they gave me press releases saying, look, we're changing our plans. It's better for people. And I said, so why are you changing your plans? And they insisted it was just because it was better for people and better for a modern workforce. And I said, well, are you saving money? They insisted they weren't saving a dime. Meanwhile, they were telling their shareholders, or at least IBM in this case, that they were going to save $200 million. And I couldn't understand how they could save $200 million because they had a massive surplus. I mean, most of the large companies had huge surpluses at that time. You know, $24 billion at Verizon, for example. So what's going on? They wouldn't explain why they were cutting benefits or that they were cutting benefits, even though they had tons of money. And, you know, that's when I finally figured out that there was an accounting gimmick going on that enabled them to boost profits. And once you sort of figure out that almost everything a company does with benefits is to boost profits, then it's just a question of following the track. So, for example, you've seen companies insist on ESOPs. They say ESOPs, which are employee stock ownership plans, oh, these are to help employees feel like they own the company too. You know, they're also owners. It's an ownership society. Well, ESOPs aren't necessarily for that. You know, many of them were set up as leveraged deals that enabled companies to borrow money cheaply. And the downside for employees was that their basically retirement plan was all in the company's stock, which is a really bad idea, especially if you're like Enron and your stock goes to nothing. People lose all their money. Companies also insist that, well, you know, employees and executives share risk. You know, they have company stock, and so they all want the company to do well. Well, they don't share the same risk. employees can see their plans wiped out. And as I saw after the market cratered in 2008, the executives at least a quarter of the companies had gains in their own personal savings plans, even when everybody else was down 40%. And even at companies that in which the executives had essentially the same funds that the regular employees had to invest in, some of them picked only winning funds out of everything. What are the odds that the executives picked only the winners? I asked the companies that, and they said, well, they're just lucky. So, you know, it's there is no shared risk. A lot of this is just it's a smokescreen. Employees don't have the same risk level. They have more risk. And another example of that is the company's paying out pensions as lump sums and saying, well, it's good for you because you can manage it yourself. Well, sure, you take the investment risk and interest rate risk and inflation risk. And the other thing that no one thinks about is the longevity risk. You know, when the companies complain that their workers are getting older and so they're going to have to pay more in pensions, well, that's nonsense. They pay out lump sums. They have no exposure to longevity anymore. Once the worker's left with its payout, the company, it doesn't matter. They could live to be 300 years old, and it won't affect the company in any way.
Well, as you pointed out, Ellen Schultz, in retirement, heist how companies plunder and profit from the nest eggs of American workers, that whereas workers' pensions have all but disappeared and have been eviscerated, the pensions for the executives are huge. I think you cited General Electric sitting on an enormous amount of money. And this practice that you're talking about has gone on with the top Fortune 500 companies. These aren't bottom feeders we're talking about here.
S&P 500 companies. We're talking about the companies that account for about 60 or 70% of all pension dollars in the U.S. And that's another misconception people have. I hear it over and over that, oh, everyone's got rid of their pensions. There aren't any pensions anymore. Well, there are 44 million people in private pension plans. That's, you know, not the post office workers, not the military. All those public plans are separate because there are 44 million at companies, corporations, and that includes retirees and active, about 50-50. So there's a huge number of people affected, and even if people don't have pensions, they ought to pay attention to this. Like, take the 401k. You might think, okay, well, I don't have a pension, so who cares? Well, the same guys that are running these games with the pension plans are running your 401k. And that means that, you know, you might have high fees that are hidden. You might have a lot of company stock in there, which is convenient for the company, but not so much for you. And you may not be aware that, especially if you're younger and lower paid, companies discriminate against lower paid employees in their retirement plans. And they're allowed to do so, despite rules that say you cannot discriminate in favor of the executives when you talk about these regular plans. Now, they can have discriminatory plans for executives, and they all do, separate plans. But when it comes to the rank and file plans, whether it's a 401k or a pension, they're supposed to treat everyone more or less the same. But they have used a lot of loopholes in the discrimination rules that result in discrimination against lower-paid employees. So you could have a company that says, oh, we contribute 4% to a 401k. Well, sure, they'll contribute 4% to low-paid and 6% to high-paid. That's just one example of how this works. Same thing with pensions. You provide a higher percentage to a higher-paid person than you do to a lower-paid. And this is all legal. It's all a perversion of the discrimination rules.
Well, just in closing, Ellen Schultz, you mentioned how the pensions laws were changed to enable this looting by, you know, through the small print and through clever lawyers, reminiscent of the clever people on Wall Street who suckered all these people into subprime mortgages and you know, ran off with billions. And even on top of that, you had people like Paulson, the hedge fund manager, who was able to bet that the house of cards would all come down. And he made, what, $5 billion by betting against the house. So how much – and we know that getting rid of Glass-Steagall and all the so-called, laws that were passed to free up Wall Street entrepreneurs ended up contributing to the crash. In terms of the looting of pensions that you've covered in your book, Retirement Heist, how – companies plunder and profit from the nest eggs of American workers. How did the Congress do this then? And this is the same Congress. We should remind ourselves it's going after Social Security now. And several times in this interview, Ellen, you pointed out that if it wasn't for Social Security, these people would have nothing.
Well, one of the key things they did was when federal pension law was enacted, it didn't have any provision for remedy, which means that there are no damages for pain and suffering or punitive awards of any kind. So you don't have the kinds of things that actually tend to finance large class actions. So companies have learned that there's really little downside to even breaking the law, because the worst that can possibly happen under benefit law, and this means for health care that they provide and pensions and 401ks, the very worst that can happen is that they have to pay the benefit that they were supposed to pay. Now, if the person's dead already, well, then they don't have to pay anything. And so with this in mind, companies can drag out litigation for years, and people die or give up in the meantime, and companies end up ahead.
Well, Ellen, I thank you so much for joining us here today and for allowing us to offer up your new book, Retirement Heist, How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers. It's as disturbing it is, it's very compelling, and I think it's very necessary I think people should equip themselves, at least if you believe that you are a part of the 99%. Would you agree?
Yes, very much.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, Helen.
Thank you, Ian.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Again, I've been speaking with Ellen Schultz, who's an investigative reporter who has covered the retirement crisis for more than a decade, formerly with the Wall Street Journal. Her reporting led to congressional hearings, proposed legislation, investigations by the Treasury and the GAO. She has won dozens of journalism awards for economics, financial, and investigative reporting, including 3 Polk Awards, 2 Loeb Awards, a National Press Club Award, and in 2003, she was part of a team at the Wall Street Journal who were awarded the Pulitzer Prize for articles on corporate scandals. Her new book, Retirement Heist, How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers. Thank you so much for joining me. I'd also like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available at ianmasters.com, where you can sign up for podcasts and contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another background briefing. Bye for now.